Hello, I'm Catherine Austin Fitz. I'm going to be your host today for our Soleri Audio Seminar, Introducing John Rappaport. The purpose of this interview is to introduce you to someone very special whose leadership and work can help you survive and thrive in uncertain times. John is a successful author and journalist who's based in Southern California. Through his website, nomorefakenews.com, his writing, audio seminars, speeches, and consulting, he's one of the finest teachers I know about how our civilization really works, who runs the planet, how they do it, and how we can gather power and transform our situation. One of the areas where John's depth of research is extraordinary is health and medicine. John's wife, Dr. Laura Thompson, is a very accomplished nutritionist, and the two together are a powerful combination addressing what is causing many of our health problems and how to build and maintain health. On the event resource page to this audio seminar, we've provided links to John's website and some of our favorite books and products at John's online store. John has just completed a three-part audio seminar, Mind Control, Mind Freedom, which is an outstanding distillation of his work. And after you finish digesting this audio seminar, it's a great place to begin to go through John's material. And before we start the interview, I just want to tell a story. I was flying back from Arizona earlier this week, and as you know, every time you're in an airport, there's CNN blaring in the background as you wait to board your plane. And so this time I had downloaded John's audio seminars for Mind Control, Mind Freedom, and I was sitting in the airport, and every time CNN started to encroach, you know, and sort of make me feel Orwellian and manipulated, I would turn on John's audio seminars and listen. And I can't tell you how much I enjoyed being in the middle of DFW Airport, so long as I could listen to Rappaport and completely shut out CNN. It was great. But, you know, that's only one of hundreds of stories I could tell you about how listening and reading John's work has simply just provided me with immense pleasure and delight, because John's truth is really the truth that can set us free. So, John, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Well, please tell us a little bit about how you started on this incredible journey and how, without being an insider, you built a better understanding of how the world works than most insiders have.
Well, in 1982, I began writing articles for LA Weekly, which was at that time a fledgling alternative newspaper in Los Angeles. And that happened as a kind of a quirk. I had been working on some fiction. I had never been a reporter before. And a friend of mine who worked at the Weekly said that they might be interested in doing an interview on the nuclear situation at the time. And I happened to know a guy who was very active. So I interviewed him, and I thought, well, gee, that's easy. And I submitted the story, and they printed it and paid me. And I thought, wow, that's, you know, this is like kindergarten. So I began receiving assignments from the Weekly in the early 80s. And the more I wrote, the more assignments they gave me. And it finally got to the point where I felt that the whole thing was beginning to get a little trivial, because it wasn't really the kind of material I was interested in after a while. And so at about that time, I had begun researching my first book, which was called AIDS, Inc., and this was an effort to show that the research, the lab research behind the whole idea of HIV, was completely misguided and ultimately fraudulent. And that shifted my thinking completely on a lot of different subjects. You know, when you find that some people that you supposedly are trusting are lying through their teeth in one area, you begin to think, well, gee, I wonder what's happening in a lot of other areas. And so I began writing more adventurous articles. And eventually I found that the newspapers and the magazines, some of them at the time that I was publishing for, were no longer interested in my material. It was a big wall. And that gave me a clue, because I knew that the material hadn't really changed in terms of my research. I mean, the research was still just as good. But the adamant nature of the no, you know, we don't want want this, we're not interested, told me that I was stepping on some toes. And so that's really how I got launched. I thought, okay, this is a good sign. This means that I'm on the right track. So let's just keep on going. And let's try to find out in various areas who's really running things from behind the scenes and what their motives are. And that's really how it all began.
It's interesting. When I first started to try and find excellent sources on really how power was managed globally, a lot of the material is organized around what, you know, so what topic would be AIDS or what topic would be peak oil. But it was very hard to find good information on who's really running the world, and how do they do it? How do they manipulate? And I'm very curious to know how it was that you finally evolved into really looking at the questions of who.
Well, it's sort of a natural outcome. I think the who is the hardest question. The how is a lot easier, even though it's not so easy, but it is certainly easier because you can see the pattern around you. You can see that the media machine that we are dealing with every day is giving us bits and scraps of this and that, seemingly all directed in, toward getting us to not understand really anything about the big picture. You know, I mean, if you're going to build a rocket and you're going to go to Mars, somebody has to have the whole idea in mind. You can't just do it, oh, we'll stick this part here, and then we're waiting for another part to come in from Boston, and I guess we'll put that over here. You know, you can't do it that way. Somebody's got to have the big picture in mind in any company, in any business, in a family, you know, in any kind of enterprise. And so once you begin to see that the planet itself is a kind of enterprise, then you begin to look at things differently. And that's what I did. I began to say, okay, well, how are they, whoever they are, running things? What are they doing? And the first, I would say, major idea that occurred to me is to look at monopoly, because monopoly means that a few people are controlling a great deal.
Right.
And if that's the case, well, you know, let's look at that.
Right. Now, you have this notion of cartels, which I think is a really an excellent way to organize an understanding of who's who and how they run things. And perhaps you could go through that for us.
Yeah, sure. A cartel is a kind of monopoly. In other words, it's a group of people that get together and decide that they're going to control a certain market or a certain area of human life. For example, media, medical, energy, money. These things that we tend to look at as being a lot of pieces lying around somewhere, I gradually began to see that that wasn't the case at all, and that there were guiding principles in each cartel, in each monopoly. For example, in the medical field, it was all about researching germs and treating germs with chemicals that would kill the germs. And eventually I began to discover that sometimes diseases were literally invented out of thin air just to have a phony germ so that companies could develop drugs to kill germs that really weren't even important or weren't even there. The invention of reality, so to speak, in order to control people. And I began to extend that principle into other areas. And of course, as many people know, when you start to get below the surface of money, it also becomes fictional in a way. It's invented out of thin air, and it's done in such a way that relatively few people have most of the money and everybody else has a little bit or nothing at all. And this principle began to become contagious as I looked over these various cartels even extending into military, intelligence, this sort of thing. Organized religion, transnational corporations. These were different groups that were bent on achieving monopoly. And the way I like to put it is, if you were from outer space and you were coming down to this planet for the first time in a rocket, and you looked over the whole scene dispassionately and you said, we want to control this whole show down here. What are the areas that we need to control that will give us the leverage to take over the whole planet? And you would begin to think about these areas. Well, media, energy, money, medical, because everybody's completely hypnotized by medical these days. Of course, government, intelligence, transnational corporations. You know, 7 to 9 of these basic cartels are the ones. And that's where the control comes in. Well, what's happened historically on this planet is that these cartels have evolved over time, organically evolved to become more and more powerful until these days we are really looking at 7 to 9 of these cartels that are in a position to literally run the planet.
You have a great description in the Mind Control, Mind Freedom audio seminar about the sort of personal emotions and viewpoint of the people who do this. Because I think the hardest thing for many people to understand about how the deeper system that you're describing works is they can't fathom wanting to have that level of domination or control. It's just, it's not something, it's not an urge they want, they don't want it. And you've got a great description of sort of the controlled or to be controlled, which I really would love it if you just touch on.
Sure. There are a number of ways to describe this, but control over other people is what gets these guys up in the morning. This is their motivation. This is their basic motivation. It's the sort of residue of what happens to a person when they have nothing left. And this may be the oddest thing to try to understand, but it's certainly true. In other words, what is the last refuge of a person who has no dreams left, whose dreams have been completely trampled out and flattened and destroyed from without and from within, but still maintains an urge to survive, certainly. And let's say that person was raised in a family where there was a great deal of money and influence. Where's that guy going to go? What's he going to opt for? And what are his fears going to be? Well, the fears are going to be of other people. Because, look, if you don't have a dream left of your own, something you really desire, something for the future, and you look around you and it appears that everybody else does, that's frightening. And what's your reaction likely to be? I have to control all of this. Otherwise, chaos will ensue and I will be swept up in some horrible vortex and disappear forever. And this is how these people begin to build their own lives from the ashes of being completely disconnected from their own dreams, their own visions of a life that would produce real joy for them. The whole thing twisted and perverted, and what they end up with is an overriding motive to control everybody else. And all their thoughts and actions begin to move in that direction.
If you've ever been on the inside, it's very hard to explain to people who haven't the extent to which everything is, you know, planned, replanned, triple planned. It's you know, 100-year plans, 50-year plans.
Right.
It's remarkably It's remarkably controlled and coordinated.
I've brushed up against this once in a while, and it's very interesting because, you know, it's almost like you're walking down a road and suddenly a bunch of people ride by at a gallop on horses, and, you know, you didn't see them, and then they go whoosh. And that's kind of the feeling of what it's like, because these people among themselves are all about power and control and nothing else. That's the language they speak. That's the way they think. That's the plans they make. That's what they do every day. It's understood. It's assumed. It's accepted. That's their world. It's like, you know, if you were to walk into a trade show about some esoteric kind of electronics that runs certain weird satellite radios, you know, and you never even heard of this, and there you are, and there's speakers and people talking, you think that you've gone to another planet. But they're all totally into it. Well, that's the way it is with these elite insiders and power and control. That's the way they talk. That's the way they think. And they don't even, they don't give it a second thought. I mean, that's the swimming pool that they're always swimming around in together. And you get this very weird sensation of what is going on with these people. This is the way they look at everybody else, as simply pieces on the chessboard.
Right. It's fascinating because I'm just always amazed at the difference in perception between those who've been on the inside, who see how the different cartels collaborate and coordinate cross-function at very high speed. Because these systems, whether within a cartel or between cartels, have been evolving for centuries. And those outside can't fathom the extraordinary cooperation and collaboration, particularly around some of the money, because they can't fathom the organizing principle. I mean, why would you want to control the whole planet centrally? That doesn't make any sense.
Right. Yeah, but, in reading some of your work on this vis-a-vis money, which is fantastic, you see, for example, how deals A, B, C, and D are made, and they're reported about in the newspapers, you know, a buyout, a leverage, a this, a that, a cooperative enterprise, and so on. And then when I read your analysis of what really happened there, the forces at work, the people, the cartels, if you will, you see that a completely different picture emerges of what these people are really up to.
Right.
And what they are ultimately up to is more control, more power. And that is the guiding principle. And once you see that, then everything begins to fall into place. And as you say, the interaction between these cartels, as they recognize common interests, can become very high speed indeed. It's like creatures who suddenly see that, you know, if we all huddle around this pile of leaves out here in the woods and shield it from the wind, and we rub a couple of sticks together, we're likely to get a fire, and then, you know, everything will be fine. And it's similar to the way the cartels recognize one another. Well, if we can plant the media in this direction and so forth on this kind of a story, then we can move in with this sort of medical pronouncement over here, and pretty soon everybody's civil rights are gone because we can quarantine people and we can force them to take toxic drugs for a disease that doesn't even exist. But we'll have to float some cover stories here to convince the public. And we know some good medical writers over here, and we have contacts over here. And so we can arrange this whole thing. Bing it, bing it, bing it, bing. The World Health Organization steps in, and everybody's on the same page. And pretty soon, you've got a steamroller. You've got a juggernaut moving in the direction.
You've got a profitable steamroller.
Very profitable for a lot of people.
Right.
And these people, of course, beyond a certain point of wealth, look at money as nothing more than a means to greater control, because, you know, they're not going to go broke. It's not like they're fighting poverty with billions of dollars behind them, but they see further money as a means of further control.
One of the reasons that it's been hard to build a good map of how the system really works is it's very rare for a person to be willing to take the time to go through the complexity, because you really have to come at this bottom, you know, how does this cartel work bottom up, how does this bottom up. So there's an incredible amount of time and detail that's required, but more importantly, it's surprisingly easy to buy people away or seduce them away without them knowing. And so one of the miracles of John Rappaport that I'm always so curious about is what is it about you that makes you so ornery and difficult to buy? You have not gotten distracted from this mission. And I find that quite hopeful and quite miraculous, because it's been, you know, even people who have an intention of really mapping out the system can be easily encouraged to go off on a tangent, and, you know, they wake up 10 years later much richer and feeling sad and don't know why.
Yeah.
What's your magic, John?
I've seen this happen. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, I've always been extremely stubborn, as far back as I can remember, and that seemed to be my ticket. You know, if I didn't buy that ticket, I was always going to be in trouble. And about the time that I finished college, it occurred to me that I was at a crossroad here. You know, there were opportunities. I went to one of these elite little Ivy League schools, and it's a place where if you want to, you can make a lot of connections with people and you can get into the mainstream corporate banking, whatever, world. And it just seemed to me that that was a form of personal suicide if I were going to do that, because it was so boring. I think maybe that's really where it comes down to, the boredom factor of doing something that you know is worthless, useless, as well-paying as it may be, and then you look ahead in the future and you see year after year after year unspooling the same thing over and over again in a different guise now and then, but it's basically just repetition and it just seems robotic. I was always interested.
You trade,
yeah, go ahead.
You trade... You know, on one pathway, you're given the opportunity to be part of manipulating the system power. But if you take the John Rappaport pathway, you have real power. It's authentic power. It comes, you know, you're accessing the real power in the universe, and it's something that no one can take away from you. And I think a lot of people don't understand that choice clearly when they start off.
That's a very important thing you just said there. One of my favorite writers once put it, you know, there's two kinds of power. One is basically control over other people, and that is what most people come to recognize as being power. That's what they think power is. But if there's any future for the human race, the kind of power that individuals need is the kind that radiates out from you.
Right.
It is not something, you know, like a hammer that you take and hit somebody over the head with in order to control them. And I believe that that is ultimately the choice that everybody, as you say, has to make. Which way am I going to go? Am I going to become part of some group, company, organization that, as you say, is basically manipulating the system in order to drain something out of it in the way of profit and so forth? In other words, contributing to the overall cartel control of the planet? Or am I going to find something within myself that I truly want, and am I going to apply myself to that, to my vision of what I really want, where I really want to go? What's the central juice here? What's the central motivation here? Which way am I going to go? And I think it's pretty clear that that's the crossroad, and we need more people to make the choice in the right direction, because if not, then we do get ant colonies of the 21st century. That's what we'll end up with.
Right. I'll never forget when I started my first company, I got a whole bunch of really talented employees, and we were doing things that were sort of relatively novel, and I'd lay out a process, and I'd say, okay, there are these 10 steps, and we don't know how we're going to do those two steps, so we're going to have to invent something later on. And the employees would just get really upset, and I'd go round and round, and then I discovered that the notion of inventing your world or inventing something as a matter of course was foreign to them. They didn't believe that we had the power, the right to invent our world. And I could never quite figure out how that, you know, where that programming came in. But it was extraordinary. And I think this, you know, step one to somebody switching from being manipulated by all of this to starting to envision, you know, understanding what they want and getting it is to simply realize that we have the duty, the obligation, and the power to invent our world. And then the second thing is, you know, if you start on that journey without having good maps of how the world really works, then it's very painful because you're going to have to learn it by trial and error. And that's why, you know, when a lot of times when I'm advising people who are managing big financial assets, you know, I'll just say, look, you got to go get everything John Robbins ever wrote and read it, because it's going to save you a lot of pain, you know, in bumping into walls and bumper cars and learning how the deeper system is. So I think part is also having a great map.
No question about it. It's a great tool to know pretty much how things are working, so that
right.
You're not shocked and awed by, you know, what you run up against. To go back to what we were talking about a minute ago, I think there's a central difference between people. A whole lot of people base their lives on a concept of acceptable behavior. They're really sort of walking behaviorists, whether through training, you know, through indoctrination, whatever it is. But basically within themselves, they come to accept this notion that the world works according to behavior, and that you can behave in certain ways, that's good, and other ways, that's not good. And that is their guiding star. That's what they use above all. So if somebody comes in, as you did, and says, you know, we're going to have to invent a few things here, this falls over into the area of unacceptable behavior. It doesn't even, you know, what does that mean? And this is unacceptable, and I didn't come here for this. I came here basically to behave. You know, that's why I'm here, to behave myself. And so what I need are the guidelines that apply in this organization to correct behavior. That's what I'm basically looking for. And, of course, most people don't know that that's what they're doing, but that is
right.
What their sensors are out there fishing around for. What's
right.
The correct behavior here? How is this work, you see? Not work from, you know, the inside out, not work in a profound sense, but in the most superficial sense. How do I dress? How do I talk? How do I file reports? How many pages? Where do they go? I want all these details so that I can behave in a correct fashion, you know?
Right. I always say, tell me the rules that I need to know to get along with a tapeworm quickly so I can do that.
Right. You know, how much sugar do I need to eat so that I can be in a state of half illness all the time, and then that's what I'll do. Yeah, I mean, that's growing up, I noticed that around me, you know, and because I was participating in it to a certain degree myself, I mean, through school, which is all about learning how to behave.
Right.
But eventually, I began to see that this was not okay for me, because it led to a dead end. I was one of these guys who got elected to everything when I was a kid. You know, whatever office there was to run for, I ran for it. And by the time I finished high school, I was like a 45-year-old corporate burnout, you know, at the age of 17. Because what I had seen was that basically all of these positions were completely empty. There was nothing really about them that made any sense. And when I looked at grown-ups out in the world, posturing and doing, you know, working, and yes, I am this and I do that and so forth, I could see some of that same emptiness. What this guy is really desperately, you know, reaching out to tell me unconsciously is that he's reached a dead end too, only he really is a 45-year-old corporate burnout, because he's behaving correctly, he's doing the right thing, he's advancing, and yet the correct behavior is not giving him anything back, so he has to fake it, and he's going to fake it for the rest of his life. And I was at age 17, and I said, I'm not going to fake it. I'm going to do something else. And I think that's where, you know, there's a make-break line there for people. Some people wake up to that and they say, correct behavior is not the guiding star. Therefore, I'm going to have to fall back on my own inner resources and find out, and you can underline this one 100 times, what is it that I truly want? And that's what our society basically teaches us is sort of, you know, forbidden ground. You don't really explore that one too thoroughly, because if you do, you'll find yourself at odds with the system, with the cartels.
One of the things, John, that, you know, I love the interviews that you've published where you allow an insider to speak freely behind anonymity. And there's a series that you have by a public relations expert whose name is Medavoy. Is that the correct pronunciation?
Yeah, Ellis Medavoy.
Ellis Medavoy. And in one of them, you describe something which I really think of as one of the real themes in your work. You finally say to him, well, you know, if you were operating, you know, at the highest levels and doing all of this stuff, why did you, you know, why did you leave? Why did you, you know, give interviews to someone like me? You know, why did you turn, you know, change sides? And he says, you know, no matter how much we tried to manipulate, no matter, you know, no matter how close we got to complete control, there was always this force in the universe that eluded us. And I forget what he calls it, but, you know, it's basically, you know, that the intelligence of the universe is always one step beyond manipulation or control. And when I think of your work as in manifestation, it's you're really tapping into that. You're really teaching people about that sort of ingrained freedom in the universe, how to tap into it, how to use it, and really how to build a world out of it. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. The way I look at it is, and Medavoy was very clear on this, that he felt manipulation would only go so far. It was never perfect. And as the years rolled by, it got more horrible in terms of the intensity with which these cartels were trying to manipulate the population of the world. And the thing that kept evading him was this creative force that was latent in people. It was there. It was there in individuals. It could pop out at any time where an individual suddenly would stand up and refuse to be part of the machine. And I have been, as well as a writer, a painter for the last 45 years. And so very early on, it was very clear to me that one of the great joys that a person could experience is to imagine and create. This is the very opposite of being manipulated. It's the very opposite of manipulating anybody else. And this is the kind of thing that no amount of propaganda or public relations or control can entirely kill out. And it is also, as I discovered, the secret, the source of what you do with individual freedom, what individual freedom is for, to create your world, invent your future, invent what it is that you want, invent something better than we have now. Go to the well, so to speak, and find the energy and so on and the vision to do that. And so I began to teach ways of accessing this power, very specific ways, and ways of using it. And that's what I'm mainly about now. Because if you look at it from this overall cartel paradigm that we've been discussing here briefly, what you're really looking at is centralized power. Well, what is it that happens when individuals begin to find ways and learn ways to access their own power, their own creative power, because that's what it really is? What do you get? Decentralization, 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 and more decentralization of power away from these institutions, monopolies, cartels that are literally painting reality for us. They are the painters who paint the picture of what we're supposed to see the world as every day, all the time. That's what they're doing, especially in the media cartel. They're giving us that picture of what the world is supposed to be all about. And when we wake up as individuals, we start painting our own canvases. And the more people who do that, the more people who begin to see that their own imagination and creativity does have tremendous force, and they become used to working with it, the more we find solutions to what we're facing, the more we find decentralization of power away from these various monopolies.
Right. It starts with your mind. I mean, decentralization begins with your mind. And that's why, you know, the importance of having a clear mind is so amazing. And part of that is health. And I know a lot of your work revolves around what you need to do, you know, to have a clear mind, whether it's you know, with your approaches we're talking about now or simply with your physical health. Because it's an integrated question.
Yeah, you can't divorce entirely one thing from another. I mean, there are certain ways to remain as healthy as possible over the years so that you can access this power within, so that it isn't all obscured and cloudy and foggy and walled off and soggy and so forth. Physical health is a major part of it. Imagination.
Well, where do I begin? If I'm listening to John Rappaport and I'm saying, okay, I want to de-link from the tapeworm, I want to get my mind clear, I want to start learning how to do this, because it's a process. What do I start to do? What should I do first?
Well, as you suggested at the beginning, the workshop that I just did called Mind Control, Mind Freedom is a very good place to start, because it gives you both sides of the coin. What's happening in the world behind the scenes, and then what's happening inside us behind the scenes? How can we access this power that we have to manifest what it is that we truly want?
Mm-hmm.
That's where it has to start, and that's where most people get cut off at the pass. Somehow through their lives, they decide, they learn that whatever it is that they truly want is out of reach and will remain out of reach forever, and everything after that has to be a compromise of, and a compromise on the compromise, and so on and so on and so on, all the way until they're 6 feet under, you know. And This is a reversal of that whole process. And what I'm saying is, and what I've seen countless times, is that when a person taps into that power that is connected to what they truly want, everything changes. Their health changes, their outlook changes, their emotions change, their energy changes in a very positive way. The whole thing begins to turn around. And one of the things that I'm most interested in, I give people exercises to do so that they can tap into this power, so that they can use it, so that it becomes clarified for them, so it isn't just a vague idea anymore. You know, it's something very real. It's like if you've got a Ferrari in the garage and you sit in your living room for 10 years and think about it, after a while, you're not really sure whether it's there anymore. So you actually have to do something to get into the garage, open it up, get in the car, and then you know. Well, it's that way with people. Most people who have been sort of gotten a divorce from themselves, they've divorced themselves, and now it's time to get back to the root. And this is what, if you want, you know, the highest level look at what the cartels are doing, and most of this, I have to say, is unconscious on their part. They're not really this smart. But what they're really doing is trying to cut people off from their creative power as individuals, to put something in between a person and his own creative power and his confidence and faith in that creative power, so that the person now becomes sort of, oh, I'm going here, and I'm doing this, and I'm doing that, and then I go here, and I do that, and 10 years go by, and I'm doing this, and another 5 years go by. It's all routine. It's a routine world that they're making, where people fit into slots. And the opposite of that is tremendously empowered creative individuals who are creating the realities and the futures and the worlds that they want to create individually and in cooperation with one another. That is what reverses this whole trend.
Right, and I think I can't stress enough, the more people who do it, the easier it is for everyone who does it. I mean, it's really kind of the 100 monkey syndrome, and that's the importance of networking as you do it, I find, because it's much harder to do it alone than it is to do it together. Because you do run into opposition, I think, particularly when it comes to paying the rent. Trying to find a way to do this as you find a financially sustainable way to not be inside the tape room is the key. Because I've found many people who work inside the tape room and are eager to find a way to get out. They just can't. You know, the trick is, how do I support my family and do this? That's kind of the trick. And so the desire to pay the rent takes them back into the tape room, and then it's just easier to go along.
Exactly. It's built, the system is built that way to function that way and to achieve exactly that result. So what I would point out is that, and we've talked about this before, a fundamental shift has to occur within the individual. In other words, I'm going to try to find another way to pay the rent is sort of like saying, I've been playing a nickel and dime game over here, and it's not satisfying, so let me try to find another nickel and dime game somewhere else. That's a state of mind. That's kind of a pervasive state of mind. Whereas what happens if a person says, okay, I'm going to take a step back in my mind. I'm going to find what my inner resources really are. I'm not just talking about, oh, I have training as an accountant, or I have training as a lawyer, or I have training as a medical or computer technician or whatever. I'm talking about inner resources. Entertain the possibility that when you begin to go at it that way, you actually shift your own paradigm. You shift something very profound. You're no longer trying to solve the problem on the level of the problem. You are reframing the whole thing. And when you do that, the world does not look the same to you anymore, and you can see things in it that you didn't see before, opportunities that you didn't even know were there, because now those opportunities have to do with what you really want. We walk around with this very complex set of blinders on that obscures selected parts of reality from us in order to give us a world that we see that seems to be in line with what we're supposed to do. Back to behavior again. You know, the person who is focused on behavior and focused on nothing else except I got to pay the rent is seeing the world in a specific way that feeds back to him that he's right, that this is the way things really are, and you are, you know, yeah, what you're trying to figure out here is exactly what you should be trying to figure out. Yes, 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 yes. However, the proof of the pudding is that when that person goes within and finds these inner resources that I'm talking about, say, in the workshop Mind Control, Mind Freedom, now he looks out and the blinders are not that way anymore. He's now seeing the world in a different way. And what the world is feeding back to him now is, yeah, now you're starting to really get it, and I'm going to show you, the world is saying, so to speak, those places that you were blind to before, that you never noticed before, that are going to help you get what you want, what you really want.
One of the things that helped me understand how much of our world is created by our resonance and how we resonate with others, but, you know, as set by us, was when I went through this process of what I call the enemy of the state process, where I was targeted, I and my company were targeted, I found that the other team expended a huge amount of resources to try and sort of stop my ability to resonate or get me to resonate negatively or, you know, stop me resonating with other people or really to manipulate my field and the field around me. And their faith in the ability of the what I call the invisible energies to control and manipulate a situation was far greater than mine. And, you know, sort of by reverse engineering some of what they were doing, I learned an awful lot about resonation and the power of resonation to really create our world.
Wow, that's very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was the Department of Justice who got me to read Sheldrake and study morphogenic fields and whatever. Because what I realized is they really believe in this stuff. There must be something here.
Well, that's very interesting. I mean, I've had that experience myself at various times in different ways where you come up against a situation and you see that the people who are trying to limit the truth, stop good things from happening, you know, that seem to be against creativity and creative power and all of that, as you say, they believe in what they're doing, and they have accumulated a lot of power behind it. So how come, you know, we're tiptoeing out here like mice in the field? What is it that we're lacking? And it's absolutely that faith in our own power. And when you look at power, I mean, what does it mean? Does it mean that you can go out and chop down a tree, or that you can, you know, blow a hole through a fence with a gun or whatever? It really means the power to create something that wasn't there before.
One of the great expressions in mind control, mind freedom is doily power. Do you remember that?
Yeah, doily power.
Okay, that you just have to explain that.
I've also alternatively called it in the past pink fingernail polish power, doily power. This is when you talk to people about power, and I've actually had this happen, you know, and somebody comes back to you and says, "This is really fantastic. It's given me a whole new insight into how I should change the artificial flowers in the vase in the living room and put them in the kitchen," or something like that, you know. Doily power is a sort of a thing of people want to somehow reinterpret the idea of their own power as something that's going to be completely harmless, will offend no one, will bring about no problems, and ultimately will give them very little to rejoice about themselves, because it doesn't amount to anything. It's like squeezing the last bit out of a toothpaste tube. And, it, you know, what does that do for you? And what I'm saying, and when people go to No More Fake News and they look at some of the products that are there and this workshop that we keep referring to here, this is big stuff I'm talking about. I'm not talking about some little shift of a change.
Right, and it takes trial and error. It's not something, oh, that you can be impeccable about, you know.
Yeah, right from the beginning, exactly. That's very important. Because many people are trained to believe that if it isn't going to be perfect right now, then I don't want to do it. And the only thing that can be perfect is I can change the doily. So I guess that's where I am forever, you know, and that's not true. That's not true. And there are people out there that know that it's not true. There are people in professions, for example, lawyers and the doctors and so on, who know that they have a lot of power. And they also know that they've channeled it into a certain direction that has taken them to a dead end, basically. And they know that they could apply that power somewhere else, and if they really applied it to what they truly want to do, that the power would geometrically expand very quickly. It would be more than anything else they've ever experienced before, and they know that that's really what they want. And I try to talk to people that way more and more. Look, let's not kid each other. In other words, you know and I know that you've got creative power. You've used it in the past. You've gotten yourself into a cul-de-sac, a dead end, because You made a few choices along the way that wound you up where you are now. You're not happy about it. You don't like it. You want to get out. You want something better. Don't look for something better on the same level as the dead end that you're in now. You've got to do something different. You've got to take that creative power and manifest what it is that you truly want. And if you'll give that a shot, your life will never be the same.
Right. It takes guts. But anybody can do it. Anybody can do it. I think that's the key.
It is
really
the key.
A question of making the commitment and saying, here's the line. I'm not going to cross it again, no matter what. And that's what the universe needs to kind of resonate anew around you.
Exactly.
You've got to know you're serious about that line.
Yeah, you can't fake it. In other words, you can't really say,
maybe I'll try it, and, you know, I'll try it, and maybe if it works, I'll keep doing it.
Yeah, or you can't say, I'm going to change all the magnetics, so to speak, around me by pretending that I'm really going to do something that I want to do. And maybe I can fake out the magnetic field so that it will attract for me untold amounts of gold bars and silver bars. And meanwhile, I won't be risking anything. I'll just be faking the whole thing. And I'll fake out the, you know, the magnetic fields and everything will be fine. It doesn't work that way. And I've seen that in people that have come to my seminars and that I've taught and consulted with and so on, that when they actually begin to get a handle on this idea that there is something, they don't just want it. They really, really, truly, profoundly, deeply desire it, whatever that is in their lives, that future that they want to create, what they really, really want. And when they start to get behind that, they find creative power and imagination that just is quite amazing. But right. The trick is you really have to get behind it.
Right. And they discover what you call the friendly forces.
The friendly forces
show up.
Right. The friendly forces tend to show up whenever somebody throws off the cloak of half this and a little bit of that and fake it over here and instead opt for, this is what I truly want to do.
Right.
That's when the friendly forces show up, and that's when the imagination shows up. That's when the cells of the body wake up. I mean, this is really real. The cells of the body, with most people, are basically couch potatoes sitting around watching TV, because what the cells of the body become healthy and vital in the presence of is an active, powerful imagination that is moving in a direction of getting something that the person truly desires. That's when the cells jump up off the couch and say, wow, something's going on, guys. We got to wake up. We got to get geared up here. Let's generate some energy here. Let's throw off these toxins. Let's get rolling. This guy hasn't been
this
since he was 10 years old, and he used to wake up on Saturday morning and run over the field to play baseball in the morning at 6 o'clock, and that's when we were really last alive. And here, 30 years later, something's rumbling upstairs that looks like it's the same kind of thing. So let's get with it. The cells can't be faked out either. They know. They know when that impulse is genuine.
John, you in mind control, you go through 10 manifestation exercises, and maybe you can just teach us one here to give us kind of an appetizer to the whole menu.
Well, let's see. I'll tell you what. I'll give you a different one that's not in the workshop, but something that people can actually start with, okay? And here's what you could do. Go to a room in your house that has a window, or in your apartment, wherever it is you live, and look out the window, okay? And imagine that you are projecting from where you are to the horizon something that you really want. Now, here's the beauty of it. You don't even have to know what it is that you really, really want to do this exercise. In fact, this exercise is sort of built on the premise that you don't know what you really, really, really want, but you're going to get a sort of a sense of what it might be, what it might feel like, what it might kind of give to you if you had it, a feeling, a sensation, something like that. And you are going to be like, you know, one of the mighty thunder gods or one of those characters that can kind of take all that in his hand or her hand and pop it with great power out to the horizon. Very simple, kind of comic book type exercise, very direct. Uh-huh. Anybody could do that. The trick is, though, when you project it out there, do it with feeling. It's like as if you're a classical pianist and the teacher says, okay, here's this piece by Beethoven you're going to play today, and you start playing it and it's mechanical, and he stops you and he says no. He said, that was perfect, but I don't feel anything. I'm not hearing any feeling in your playing. So when you project that sort of sense of something out there, okay, do it with feeling, even if you don't know what it is that you truly want. And then coming in behind that, you take a color, okay? Let's take orange. And you get the sense that you are projecting a whole lot of orange color out there to the house next door, to the trees, to the pavement, to the street, to cars, to the sky, to clouds. Not just sort of sketching it out there, but throwing it out there from where you are, pow, like that, with energy. And here's the key, that if you do that exercise every day, both parts, for about 10 to 15 minutes, you're going to feel something right away, sooner or later. You're going to feel that you've got some creative power within you. That's just the beginning of the journey I'm giving you here. But here's the secret. Here's the key. Actually, we do this all the time. The trouble is that what we normally project into the resonant fields around us is what is not satisfying to us, what we've right. compromised about, what we've accepted as life. We keep projecting that over and over and over again, even if we don't know it. We project it when we're awake. We project it when we're asleep. We project it in the car, at home, at work, on vacation, wherever we go. We're projecting what it is that we've got that we're not really satisfied with at all. So don't say, what's this thing about projection? Projecting what? What is he talking about? Throwing what out to the horizon? This sounds crazy. Yeah. Well, you're doing it all the time, baby.
Right, and it's not powerful.
And it's not powerful. It's not giving you what you want. It's giving
you. What I find with your exercises is the more you do them, the more powerful you get at doing them. And what the change, the shift, is it's you send this out there, and then what comes back is always, you know, a surprise in the most gentle, elegant, but smashing way. I can't, you know, it's hard to describe. It's very invisible. It's very subtle, but it's very powerful. And it's a little bit like weightlifting. You know, the first time you do it, you think, well, I don't know if this is going to work. And you just say, just do it. You know, just do it. Just see what happens. And it works.
Exactly like that. It's exactly like
right.
that. I've had many students who've told me that it, you know, they've used that analogy. You go to the gym. It's a drag, you don't like it. A week later, a month later, 2 months later, you're saying, wow, I'm getting up and going to the gym. This is good. Same with these kind of very direct
yeah.
exercises. At first, it doesn't make any sense. I don't know what I'm doing. You do it anyway, and after a while, you say, gee, I just actually put this piece of orange color on this tree about 3 miles away. Wow.
Wow.
I just did that. And not only that, I could feel the energy running up my spine when I did it, and my cells seem more alive, and I'm feeling like, wow, I'm not just some, you know, worker bee. Wow, there's more space around me. My vision's clear when I walk down the street. I'm more alive. What am I doing anyway? What is it that I really want? What is it that I really want to manifest, to project, to create, to invent in the way of my world, my future, a better world for everybody? These deceptively simple little exercises are sheer dynamite if you do them every day for a few minutes, and I describe them very specifically in the workshop. And again, it's reversal of the coin. The cartels want to project their world onto you and everybody else, because that's all they know
right,
about.
Right, so you live your life in a way that maximizes their energy, not yours.
Exactly, and so when you go along with that, precisely as you say, you're maximizing their energy, and the drain of energy is coming out of you. That's your payoff for helping them, is you have less energy. You know, congratulations, you just won the prize. You ran out of energy, and now, you know, you're going into decline, and we've got a wonderful cemetery plot that we'd like to sell you as the capper on the whole thing. Whereas you can turn all that around, and they want to create your world for you. Thank you very much, but no thanks. I'm going to do my own, and I'm going to do it with power. And that's what it's all about. And that's what I teach is all about. It's all about getting you to do that and to do it with intensity and long enough so that 6 months from now you're going to be embarked on stuff you wouldn't have believed.
So basically it's how to see power, how to understand power, how to see the power lines, and how to start to build power in a way that helps you get to where you want to go or do what you want to do. That's John Rappaport.
Yeah, and you know, where it joins in so great with your work about money is, I mean, money is the worldly form of energy. So if people begin to see their own power and their own energy and their own ability to create on so many different fronts, then they begin to say, okay, well, money is this fluid idea that I can use to do that. I don't have to be part of the static, stagnant money pool that drains away mine and gives it to a few other people. You know, we can create that way too.
Right. And money's a great tool to build your world and or to collaborate on inventing the world, but you can't do that until you understand, you know, I can invent my, you know, first a person has to know they can invent their world, that we have the power to do that, and then they can look around and say, well, what are the tools I can use? Well, here's money. This is a tool I can use.
Absolutely.
Right. Well, we're coming up to the question period, John, and so in closing, what I would love you to do is walk through a listener. So I'm a listener. I've listened to this audio seminar. I'm intrigued, or I really understand what you say. I'm going to listen to Mind Control, Mind Freedom. Where do I go from there? How do I access John Rappaport's work? How do I access his speeches? How do I access his consulting? How do I access his painting? Tell me how our listeners can best interact with all the different things you do.
Okay. My site, again, is www.nomorefakenews.com. Go there. You'll see the products. You'll see the services. You'll see that workshop, Mind Control, Mind Freedom. Start there. And after that, then you're also going to see other products, other levels of intensity of exercises that I teach people how to do to increase their creativity and power. They're right there linked on the site. A great one is called Imagination Exercises for a Lifetime. And you'll read articles that I post on the site. You'll begin to put together what I'm doing with what Catherine is doing with Solari and see how money and creativity can work together in fantastic ways for yourself. You will be able to find products at Solari of mine and also on my site that have to do with these interviews with Ellis Medavoy and many newsletters that I put out that really give you the way the world is built so that you really do see the map much more clearly and you know how to navigate as you move with your own creativity and stay current with the site and you're launched. You really are. You just have to do it.
Okay, well, before we go to questions, Sean, I just, from the bottom of my own heart, I want to thank you because all of your work made it much easier for me to make it through the enemy of the state period successfully and to start and build Solari. You know, I'll never forget your interviews coming in. I used to, literally, the dog would look at me like, what's wrong with her? I'd just start dancing around the room laughing and saying, that's it. That's exactly how it is, and I felt I wasn't alone in this world, and you know what you could do, I could do. So they were a source of just tremendous, tremendous pleasure and